April 26, 2021. It's a Walk for Pedro show.
Thank you.
Watt from Pedro Show, happy Monday, last Monday of the month. Started with John Coltrane. Well, actually, it was Jimmy Garrison because we did part two of Love Supreme Resolution. And as everybody knows, that starts with the bass. Then we had, after that, just the number two. That's the title. Luke Stewart works for upright bass and amplifier two. It's the second installment. And people, Brother Matt He said that I love God on the pleasure point a couple miles south because we're still quit quarantine on mobile. I'm not totally man alone because those software engineers in Estonia with their Skype invention, I got with me Brother Luke Stewart. Welcome aboard, Luke.
What's happening? What's happening?
Well,
so much for having.
Yeah, absolute. Major bass. I love it. Love it. Let's go through your journey in music, please. Please. Your earliest musical recollection.
Playing music or just encountering music?
Yeah, encountering. Like, how far back does your memory go where you, can think of music?
Man, let's see. Well, I grew up I was raised in the Mississippi Gulf Coast, and I remember driving with my mom, you know, to and from school, to and from her job and all that kind of stuff. And, you know, here she's a child of Detroit. You know, she was born and raised in Detroit in the 60s, you know, classic Motown generation era. So it was a lot of Motown, but it was also, you know, she's of the 80s soul generation. So it was a lot of Luther, you know,
a lot of
Kenny G as well, smooth jazz type stuff. But I also definitely specifically remember hearing a lot of on the radio, you know, the like Southern Soul Blues, you know, that sort of like Malico Records type stuff.
Yeah.
Mark G's, you know, Johnny Taylor, even that kind of stuff.
Sure.
You know, that's what I remember hearing first. And also, you know, the church, you know, my mother was raised me in the church. So gospel was early on for sure. I was raised as an only child. So a lot of things that I encountered were sort of through, I guess you could say, self exploration.
Yeah.
As well as the environmental discovery. So I definitely remember when I was a little kid, I wanted to play the saxophone because I liked the Pink Panther. And I wanted to play the Pink Panther song on like a show and tell day at school. So
now, in the pad you grew up, was there musical instruments?
Not at first. At first, it was just me and my mom in a smaller town in the Mississippi Gulf Coast called Goshen, Mississippi.
Yeah.
There were no instruments there. But then when we moved to Ocean Springs, where I went to high school and stuff, we eventually got a piano. That was kind of like donated from a family friend. And my mother played piano. She was musically inclined. She played violin in the orchestra in Detroit and stuff. But she gave up, after high school. But she was always musically inclined. So we got the piano and she would, practice piano. I would practice piano a little bit.
Yeah.
But also,
I was going to ask you, did you jump on that piano?
Yeah, a little bit.
Did you get mostly, did you get lessons?
I did take some piano lessons when I was much younger. Actually, my grandmother, on my father's mother, sort of was the first person to show me piano. That I must have been like 4 or 5 years old, something like that.
And how was the experience? Because some people have terrible piano lesson experiences that's been on the show.
if it's my grandmother, then it was, you know, she was a loving, you know, caring grandmother that loves her grandson.
Yeah. Different.
So I remember looking at, you know, she was also a piano teacher. So I recall going over there a couple of times when it was time to visit, and she would, you know, show me some things on the piano. Later on, also in like early elementary school, I took a couple of piano lessons, but nothing like super serious, you know what I mean?
Yeah. Right. What about school? Were you in the marching band or the choir? Or well, you were singing in church, right?
I was not singing in church, no.
No? Oh, okay.
No. That was where I was listening.
Okay.
To the gospel and all that kind of stuff that was happening. But, yeah, when we moved to Ocean Springs, that was when I first started sixth grade. And, first year of middle school. And it was a new school for me, and I wanted to be a PE. moving to a new town, new school, all that kind of stuff. I signed up for PE, but it was all full. So the only thing that was left over was band, oddly enough. So I joined the school band, and, you know, they do the thing where they try you out for the instruments and all that kind of stuff.
Yeah, would you end up with?
And so I ended up with saxophone.
Ah, great. What, alto?
Yeah. Alto saxophone in the marching band and in the concert band.
Yeah, okay.
And it's down south, so it's, you know, like the southern marching band tradition. So it was definitely that kind of experience more so than, you know, than anything else.
Yeah, like a square thing. Yeah, kind of some showbiz.
Yeah, it was showbiz. And you know, we appreciated. I also recall, you know, going to the Battle of the Bands and all that kind of stuff.
Yeah.
Which was very much in that Southern marching band tradition. Grambling State, Jackson State, Alcorn, Mississippi Valley State. You know, they would have it would be a big event.
Sure.
Where it would be, you know, not even a football game is happening, just the bands are coming out and playing, and those were great. But my school was not like that.
Okay.
My school was a, you know, the thing about Mississippi is that it's still reeling. When I was there, it was still obviously reeling from its dark past in racism. So what you have in Mississippi are counties and towns that are either, you know, 90% black or 90% to 100% white.
Yeah.
And the Gulf Coast is a little bit different in that demographic where I'm from. But still it was a majority. Like the culture of that, I'll say black marching band tradition in the South wasn't present in my school. Yeah. So we played like Disney songs.
Square John. How long do you stick with the sax? How do you make the move to the bass?
Well, so saxophone, I started getting pretty serious about it. I'll say like senior year of high school.
Yeah.
Just because I was sort of at the point where I had been listening to jazz and a lot of weird music and had been in bands by that time.
Yep.
But I saw saxophone in the context of Mississippi as being a way of distinction, you know, outside of the context of like marching band outside of school, essentially. Because a lot of my friends also played like guitar and bass guitar. There were no upright basses to be seen or found, or like there was no possibility of me like interacting with that at all, when I was in Mississippi.
Well, what about the bone or a sousaphone or that's bass clef.
Yeah, that's true. I did, I'll say early on in my high school marching band stint, I did play, there was a moment where I played tuba. So yeah, that did happen.
Okay.
I also played baritone saxophone in the concert band. Eventually I played, like I said, I got pretty serious on saxophone. So I had the opportunity to actually play all of those, all the way up through like college. Because what, by the time I was in college,
yeah,
graduated at least, I was playing in like the saxophone quartet and, you know, very, very much like the classical new music approach, so to speak, for saxophone.
Okay. Okay. I want to play this, I guess if the first song I played was number two, I got to play number one.
Thank you.
anyone want to hear about the Relentless Semiotics device? It drives always, rides sometimes. It grains dwelling ineptitude just to pound and flail. Or what else? Now again tomorrow, probable riff seemingly intended for BPM's reprise. Commanding dandy, demanding candy, foiled by sidereal mimicry. We have giant eye chugs just pouring into tiny glasses. Uncocked smoke jogs amuck. Don't ask too much of the earth, or else you'll get pseudo-gumption from household products. Savory sonic scraped fragrant sparkles, riding the back of a feed where spies are mise-en-scene proof through polarizing knolls at the O-Run Canceller. You know it's astronomy for the migraine. Visuals are dwindling meniscus growing on rocks. They spike the hang, stray from the herd, some cursive defloration of mirth gibber, unearthed only to recapture itself mined from yesterday. The yen and wen, my friend. It was an audio delight upon which to stumble. Have been enjoying for some months now, and being long bored with the band, I'm delighted by original spreading of musical infection. Hold the line in the sand, powerful music, a benchmark by which all should be held accountable. Yet since others would rather drain daddy's pandering bubblegum, swill from his spoiled and ill-informed progeny, only those seeking greater good through true gratification will be able to find it on their own. Birthing this wonderful gem, unfestine sagittal, roaring up from the mountains, coming down in a douchebag avalanche to touch the world. But lucky surfers may enjoy with their next double click, heartfelt but mock chamber music, interlaced with Lucky Charms marshmallows to tickle your ear holes. Any single track combines elements of trope, plied by bungling varieties of years pouring on top of it. Some little niche from astronomy, you don't want to know where it came, you don't care where it went, but some diaphanous pulverization ritual grinds out angular mind strokers. It's a sound check while waiting for the drummer, yo. Zippy dunk super goggle. We're going to do this attacking in Blunderland. Oh, I don't know what to tell you except admitting nothing. Instead, pummeling the air with funky little nothings, wrenched from rhythm and chants, kind of like incendiary chlorophyll, if you know what I mean. I get an auto-reverse mohawk anytime I'm in mid-conversation, digging another quirk rock nugget from the vastness of possibility. We play like this as few else seem capable. Capable? Well, I wonder, you know. It's a cosmic dwindling of groaning rock. Sometimes it's backward into unrelenting currents. Wet hooks, phosphorescent boulders eddying from whisper to deepest null space. The sweetest gravity of a juicy groove. Oh, it poured right on top of the space that we left for it. It was a blunt force cuddling blues, you know. It was hard but love. The closest we ever get to the blues, except for maybe when endless concubines rut.
Thank you. Thank you.
Swap for Pedro Show. That was number one from Luke Stewart. Solo bass guitar. The bass guitar. So I'm still, I want to know how, it sounds like you're making a lot of progress with the saxophone.
Yeah.
And so when does the bass come in?
Okay, so I first started playing the bass guitar when I was 13. I had been playing the saxophone, you know, in school for the marching band, throughout middle school and basically the summer between middle school and high school, I started playing the bass guitar. And, I guess that initially came about because I had a friend who had been playing, electric guitar for, you know, a few years, and he was already like pretty good at it. And we were friends, and he was talking about like starting a band.
Yeah.
And you should play the bass.
Yeah.
And I was like, cool. I've been interested in doing that anyway. Or actually I wanted to play guitar first, and I actually did. I was able to get like $100 acoustic guitar. And, I took a couple of lessons on acoustic guitar. That was also the same time that my mom, you know, seeing my interest in music, decided to get back into music as well. So she bought a violin for herself, but she didn't ever play it. So I got to mess around with it a couple of times, but you know, I never had the opportunity to take the violin seriously just because there was no outlet for it. There's no orchestra. You know, the guy that I was taking guitar lessons with for like, you know, maybe 2 months, also showed me some things on the violin, but he wasn't a violin player. So,
yeah, right. They're in fifths, right? They're tuned in fifths. Big jumps between the string. How'd you find the difference between a horn and a string thing?
Well, I'll say the biggest difference was that for the horn, for the saxophone, it was in school.
Okay.
It was marching band. It was like, you know, this band director yelling at me, you know, it was like the band nerds. It was the whole thing.
Okay.
Whereas playing the guitar and the bass guitar was like self-discovery in music.
Yeah.
You know, out of school more and a way of connecting and hanging.
Sure. Completely different world.
So that's how it was for me in that regard.
And what was your first bass guitar? I'm a little prejudiced towards bass.
It was a Of course. It was a green Fender Squire bass.
Okay. Squires ain't too bad. Some of those I played are really good.
Yeah, and I remember it had a high action.
Oh like, yeah,
my
bass action was so bad that you could stick your hand between the strings and the frets.
But I definitely specifically remember appreciating that because I figured that would help me get strong hands.
That's right.
So that's what I played throughout high school. Was that green Fender Squire bass?
And what about what about amplifier?
It was like a little. It was the PV combo. I forget exactly which model, but it was the small one.
You know, PV's from Mississippi.
From Meridian, Mississippi. That's right. I've been to the factory.
Okay. My first big, like a big amp, like I had 215s. It was 300 watts. Was a PV. I think it was called a 400. So. Did you and your buddy was playing guitar? Did you guys end up making that band? Did you do any gigs?
We did. We did not end up making that band. I think we like kind of went separate ways. We jammed a couple of times, but I think musically we were into different things.
Okay.
I'll say he was the one that introduced me to my favorite bassist, which is Les Claypool.
Oh yeah.
Primus.
Sure.
He Primus. And he introduced me to Square Pusher.
Oh yeah, you know who really digs him is Flea. Flea turned me on to Square Pusher.
Yeah, he's amazing. Like, as a bass player, like, let alone the crazy electronic stuff or whatever. But, yeah, he's phenomenal, you know. So, but I also appreciated him because of the electronic stuff, because I was also interested in that as well. And I guess in my mind somehow, early on, I kind of, like, had it in my mind that I wanted to do something similar. So I was also interested in electronic music. I got like pirated versions of, you know, Fruity Loops and Reason, because that was this, the era that I'm from.
Okay. Also, but, he's kind of a one man band.
Exactly. So I was very enamored by the one man band thing, in terms of, the possibilities of electronic music. So, you know, obviously from Square Pusher went to like Aphex Twin. And, you know, a lot of different I would follow labels, you know, so like Warp Records, Reflex Records, Planet Mew, all that kind of stuff.
Yeah.
From Europe, I was super into. But then also I was super into like Primus and the Minutemen.
Well, you get into the stand up bass, which is kind of like a giant violin without the chin part.
It's true.
Well, how'd that happen? How'd that happen?
So that came about when I moved to DC, in 2000. I moved to DC in 2005, shortly after Hurricane Katrina. I was in college and I was studying international studies, and I had set up an internship for myself in Washington DC, sort of following that international studies track or whatever. And it was the same time. It was around the same time that Hurricane Katrina happened. So I came to DC for the internship. And then I eventually transferred to American University in 2006. And that's where I first had the opportunity to interact with an upright bass, in a real way. And it came about because I was still a saxophone player and a bass guitar player. And, I was in the jazz band. It was my first time being in like proper jazz band, at American University. And the director used to have jam sessions with the students. And one day I just brought in my bass guitar and instead of my saxophone, and that was the first time he knew that I played bass at all. So I played and he was like, oh man, you should be playing upright. And so I was like, cool. And so the school had, you know, an upright bass that nobody was using. And so I was able to basically make it my instrument for the duration that I was there.
Well, we gotta give that cat credit. Who was that professor?
His name is Dr. Will Smith.
Yeah, thank you, Dr. Smith. Because that's a big changer. And then, you know, those cost a little bit of coin, you know, so to get to use one like that's fucking happening.
Yeah, I mean, you know, between saxophone and upright bass, I pick, you know, two of the most expensive instruments. You know, so. But, you know, the upright bass thing, I was able he was very much connected with the, you know, the incredible jazz community of Washington DC, the legacy of it even, and the historical significance of it, the whole thing. So, in playing the bass, I was able to connect with that community and with that legacy and tradition. In Washington DC, connected with various bass players here. I took a few lessons with, a guy by the name of Herman Burney. He was a major influence, very in like me learning how to play the bass. I also took lessons with Steve Novosel, who was the bass player with, Rasan Roland Kirk.
Yeah.
One of my favorites is his work on Inflated Tear.
Yeah.
I also took lessons with Ephraim Norfolk, He got my bow in together. He showed me some things on the bow.
Some Arco.
You know, yeah, Arco stuff. And, you know, a lot of other, you know, informal situations like that with the elders. Butch Warren.
It's really important that kind of connect.
But Butch Warren was a very influential person in terms of getting like jazz experience.
Yeah.
He used to play every Tuesday and sometimes on Sunday. Every Sunday and Tuesday usually at a place called Columbia Station in DC, which I've described as, it's like if you want to know what jazz is, what jazz really is, it's embodied in a place like Columbia Station, which is, you know, there's hardly anybody there. It's a bar. It's kind of smelly. And there's a bunch of old guys playing some old jazz tunes. And it's super deep. And it's like touching, but melancholy in that jazz way. But also, you know, endearing in that way. So like it had that kind of vibe in general, jazz and cocktails, you know, lush life, that kind of vibe, you know?
I know, man. Look, we're at the end of the first hour, April 26, 2021, edition Watt Peter Show. Special guest, Luke Stewart. Hold tight for hour two. April 26, 2021. It's the second hour of the Watt Peter Show.
first time. In an instant, in the crowd, I heard footsteps, familiar tone of a heel step on your own. And in your face I saw worry, and of course I was in a hurry to get away. But just where to be going, that is what I'd like to know. And I don't mean to be gotta move. I gotta move. I gotta move. I gotta move. Thank you.
on the cane. The black is a fourth rain. Change is never gonna come if I keep praying the same. Birth to black is part of Africa. Never will I be tame. Kill Tarzan and Jane and rocking the lion's mane. These names, they must refrain from going in with the pain. It's a natural part of my whole sabbatical. Spiritually stay your radical. Kill my father, but now I'm coming back for you. Beautiful wind the instrument. Conversate with the infinite. Drumming beyond the genesis. Darker waters you swimming in. Living and dying times. Carefully place the rhymes. Somewhere beyond the signs. Somewhere deep in the mind. It's a hardcore. We break down floors and stop your feet. True floors. You do not want the Italy anymore. The seas ain't sure that everything is peace, not war. See the black anger and get that we need more. The reasons for the words no longer beat these walls. I feed them wrong. Live in the world and don't see wrong. See my God. I was meant to be so high. Read my mind and leave my people on this rise. Here's the dark star of a part of me. Poetry pick a lot of me. Heavenly body side of me. I feel that goal. It's the spirit of the valley. We taking it back to how we see living men who inspired me. I feel that soul. I claim the born to matches from the souls of left of patches. I'm marching through my madness, stuck within the poet's habits. What's up the black is magic, out upon the fields I catch it. My people been fanatic, moving in a slave song. Futures written in crayon, something more than a say on. Waters I got away, won't undo it for Trayvon. Begging the body stay warm, everything I'ma stay on. Got something to say, I'm not $1 million baby. Times have always been shady, head in the hills I'm hazy. The clouds are driving me crazy, down to earth and I'm maybe. And it just a little, watching the picture fade from the heat. I'm seeing it sizzle. Oh, body side of me, I feel that goal. It's the spirit of the valley. We taking me back to how we see living men to inspire me. I feel that soul. It's the dark star of a part of me. Poetry pick a lot of me. Heavenly body side of me, I feel that goal. It's the spirit of the valley. We taking you back to how we see living men to inspire me. I feel that soul.
Thing, and it's the historic celebration of the music, but it's different. I'll say, you know, it's not. It wasn't the, I'll say the music that I was, you know, being super inspired by at the time.
Right.
You know, which was you know, everybody from Miles to Sun Ra to Ornette to Coltrane, all that kind of stuff. Yeah. I didn't get to interact with that tradition until I got to DC. And that was when I first encountered somebody playing the bass in that style. And just being mesmerized by, you know, just the idea of walking the bass.
Right, right. Paul Chambers.
So, yeah, it was just so insane to me.
Yeah.
Like, how are you thinking that fast? And then also thinking about all these different things that you have to do in order to make that happen. Like, it was just, like, I always felt like jazz was just so above me. Like, I'll never get there musically. But then once I found myself sort of like invited into the community, it was an encouragement, you know, in order to really practice hard and listen hard. Which I found, was probably even more important. One of the most important things about music is listening.
Absolutely.
To as much as you can.
Also, you say encourage. You know, that's an important word because maybe not so much where you were at, but it seems like with the fusion people, there's a lot of cutting, right? It's almost like sports.
Oh yeah, there's definitely the sport element to it. You know,
that's to encourage it.
There's definitely the sports element to it. There's definitely the fraternity element to it. You know, all of that kind of stuff is in there, for sure.
The initiate, the adept, who knocking on the door, who gets to come in.
And the thing that I always cherish about DC versus some of the other jazz communities that I've encountered, most specifically New York, the academic side of New York, because New York has a lot of different sides.
Sure.
But I'll say that in terms of jazz, for Washington DC, it's still being learned and passed down in the old way, where you got to go out and to the jam sessions or to the gig and connect with the elders and, you know, go hang out at their house and, you know, play with them and listen to their stories and learn the tunes, all that kind of stuff.
Yeah.
Whereas in a lot of other places, it's so academically driven to where the institutions, the educational institutions, determine the opportunities and also determine the communities. You know, there are different, schools that when they get to New York, you know, the community is already set up for them. Like if you went to such and such school, there might even be like I've heard about and have encountered people who, you know, went to such and such school and there's a whole building full of people that went to such and such school and are now in New York doing their thing. And they're like all connected and interacting with each other and playing on each other's gigs and like, and then that translates into, of course, the business,
sure,
the record industry, that side of it, you know. So that's where you get the, you know, a lot of the, I'll say the mainstream jazz movements or like the commercial music movements out of these, from these sort of school cliques. And also, to a certain extent, also the movements within, we'll say the art musics, the ones that get grants and, all these sorts of things. You know, it's interesting to see the differences in communities that are academically driven, institution driven, versus the communities that are community driven, grassroots driven.
Kind of like Grand Canyon in between them. Somebody told me that about Berklee School of Music. It's about the connects.
Exactly.
Well, I want to play Homeless Global.
Right on. Thank you.
search of new bodies, we leave ourselves at home. Plug into the network, socialize as a clone. Nobody wants to be who they are. Energized by fantasy. Wonderland filled with rabbit holes of illusion. down the road. They say freedom down the road if we could just hold on. Just hold on, freedom down the road. Do we have to go? To get away from the hell that's always waiting. Remembers Osage, Toledo, Crown Heights. Katrina, no one remembers. Right now. Right now.
Watch for Pedro Show. Homeless Global, that's from Irreversible Entanglements, which is probably a project of yours, right?
Yeah, that's Irreversible Entanglements with Kameya Yewa, also known as More Mother, who's the poet. Kier Duringer on alto saxophone, Chisera Holmes on drums, and Aquiles Navarro on trumpet. The drummer and the trumpet player also have a fantastic duo record that came out recently called Heritage of the Invisible, Part 2. Also on the same label that put out the Homeless Global and the rest of the Irreversible Entanglements material, International Anthem.
Really happening. Odd After That with Plasmic Scissordry, and then Astronation, Blacksmiths. You gave me a few tunes. Mm. What project is Blacksmiths?
Blacksmiths is a duo project of myself and drummer Warren Trey Crudup III. We used to live together in Washington, D.C., and that's kind of how the band came together. The material that you're hearing is all live. Like there's no overdubs or anything. It's all, you know, just straight up. And yeah, it's an exploration of, you know, that kind of setup, that sound, and also the themes of the song titles. You know, we're talking about, the things that made us, so to speak.
Yeah, absolutely. So like a little autobiography.
Not necessarily autobiographical.
Oh, okay.
But more like referential. You know, subtle references to certain things.
Oh, okay.
So I think I sent you Mammy's Revenge.
Yeah, that, we're gonna play that next hour.
I sent you Northern Confederate.
Right, both of those. And we just heard Astro Nation.
Oh, right on. Astro Nation is actually a cover song of Sun Ra's Astro Nation.
Interpretation,
yeah, of a very particular version of that song. It was recorded and released, I think, maybe two or three times on various albums, but this particular version that I was interpreting is from unreleased material that a very close friend of mine, Dr. Thomas Stanley, unearthed at the Sun Ra archives at the Experimental Sound Studio in Chicago. That's where one of the archives is. They're in several different places, but that's where one of them is.
I read John Swed book on Space is the Place. Incredible story about Mr. Blount. I mean, incredible inspiration.
Absolutely.
One time me and Pettibone ended up in a conga line. We were all bourboned up with, and he was doing a trippy version of Somewhere Over the Rainbow. And I don't know how it happened, but yeah, his music just, and also his idea of community, right? He would take cats right off the street and get them in the band.
Oh, absolutely. And it's funny because, you know, you go to, you know, to towns that are, you know, mid to large sized towns all across the country. Yeah, and oftentimes you'll find somebody that played Sun Ra, usually in the '80s.
Yeah, right.
You know, but like you'll encounter, you know, this has happened to me on tour where, you know, like this guy played with Sun Ra, or somebody will come up to me and be like, yeah, man, I played with Sun Ra in the '80s, you know.
And you know, all Marshall Allen. Ronnie Boykin, Ronnie Boykin, his bass man, was writing a lot of the songs. I just covered one a little more than a year ago. We're at the end of the second hour, April 26, 2021, edition Watt Pedro Show, special guest Luke Stewart. Hold tight for hour three. April 26, 2021, it's the third hour of the Watt Pedro Show. We'll be right back.
The story is complicated, you know, and in terms of the conservatization, the corporatization of jazz in industry terms, because this is an industry conversation in terms of the way that people perceive jazz and thus improvised music or any other underground music in general of that form, you know, because what happens basically is that, the industry sort of, you know, in the way that industries work in this country is that it starts to define the overall perception of what the thing is. And so in the 80s, when the corporatization of jazz happened, and this is what some elders have told me, you know, various perspectives on it, but I'll recount one perspective about Lincoln Center, in the context of a very recently departed elder by the name of Bill Brower, here in Washington, D.C. He wrote a lot of, people might know him from liner notes that he may have written, or that he did write, from albums back in the late 70s, early 80s, and throughout. He wrote for like Black Saint, Soul Note, some of those labels, and was very much a producer type of person. But he was also part of the team that started Jazz at Lincoln Center. And what he said about the start of it, at least, is that the paradigm for jazz in general before Jazz and Lincoln Center was the 70s in New York, when a lot of jazz clubs had closed, and there were a lot of jazz musicians, you know, masterful jazz musicians who were still alive from that old era, you know, people like Philly Joe Jones, yeah. people like Art Blakey, you know, and even older than him, you know what I'm saying? That were out of work. Out of relevance,
yeah,
out
terrible.
Of, you know, there was no concern. It was like the culture had moved on. So when Jazz and Lincoln Center started, it gave those people the recognition, some of the recognition and some of the gigs that weren't available whatsoever before. And ultimately the way jazz continues to be, even to this day with its hyper institutionalization, there still wasn't enough money for jazz. Like, they spent all this money on opera and orchestral music and what have you, and then they had a little bit of money set aside for jazz. And with that little bit of money, they were only able to get to so many people. So that's one explanation of the whole thing.
Yeah.
And then once the corporatization came into it, and the championing of, you know, a Wynton Marsalis, for instance, and the overall discourse that was going on around the music about what jazz is and what jazz is not, that's when it got crazy. that's when the music became associated with this clean cut conservative,
yeah,
you know, very dogmatic perception of what jazz is and what jazz and ultimately what they're saying is what music and what musician is valid and who is not.
Yeah, jive. Fucking jive. Here, I'm going to play this Brown and Gray from your Luke Stewart Exposure Quintet.
And on.
Thank you. カチカチ山。昔々、あるところに、おじいさんとおばあさんが暮らしていました。ある日、おじいさんが畑仕事をしていると、裏山から一匹のタヌキがやってきて、おじいさんが丹精した畑を荒らした上、石ころをおじいさんに投げつけました。怒って追いかけると素早く逃げていきましたが、しばらくするとまたやってきて、悪さを繰り返しましたので、切り株に鳥餅を塗ってタヌキを捕まえました。おじいさんはタヌキの足を縛って、うちへ担いで帰りました。そして、天井の針に吊るして、おばあさんに、たぬき汁をこしらえるよう言いつけて、また畑へ出て行きました。たぬきがぶら下げられている下で、おばあさんは、うすを出して、餅をつき始めました。しばらくして、おばあさんがくたびれたので、休んでいると、吊るされているタヌキが、お手伝いしましょうと申し出ました。おばあさんがタヌキの縄を解いてやると、たちまち脳天からキネを打ち下ろして、殴り殺してしまいました。そして、タヌキは早速、ババア汁をこしらえて、自分はおばあさんに化けて、すました顔をして、炉の前でおじいさんの帰りを待ちました。夕方になって、何にも知らないおじいさんは、タヌキ汁を食べるのを楽しみにしながら帰ってきました。おばあさんに化けたタヌキは、お帰りなさい。たぬき汁がおいしくできていますよ、と言いました。おじいさんはお膳の前に座り、たぬきのおばあさんの給仕で、おいしい、おいしいと舌包みを打って、ババア汁を夢中になって食べました。おかわりもしました。それを見て、タヌキのおばあさんは、ババア食ったじじい、流しの下の骨を見ろ、と言いながら、大きな尻尾を出して、裏口から逃げていきました。おじいさんは、びっくりして腰を抜かしてしまいました。そして、流しの下にあったおばあさんの骨を抱えて、おいおい泣いていました。すると、おじいさん、おじいさん、どうしたのです、と言って、裏山にいる白うさぎが入ってきました。おじいさんは泣きながら、すっかり訳を話しました。うさぎは大層気の毒がって、私に任せてください。明日、タヌキを誘い出して、ひどい目に遭わしてやります、と言って、帰って行きました。さて、タヌキは、おじいさんの家を逃げ出してから、なんだか怖いものですから、どこへも行かずに、ずっと穴に引っ込んでいました。ある日、タヌキが隠れている穴の近くで、釜で芝を刈っていました。そして、芝刈りをしながら、持ってきた勝ち栗をバリバリ食べました。すると、タヌキはその音を聞きつけて穴から出てきて、ウサギさん、そのうまそうな栗の実を少し私にくれませんか、と言いました。あげるから この芝を半分向こうの山まで背負って行っておくれ、と言いました。タヌキは芝を背負って、ずんずん山に向かって歩き出しました。後ろを振り返りもせず、せっせと歩いて行きました。その隙に、ウサギは、懐から火打ち石を出して、カチカチカチ、カチカチカチ、と火を切りました。ウサギさん、ウサギさん、カチカチ言うのは何だろう。この山はカチカチ山だからさ。ああ、そうか、と言って、タヌキはまた歩き出しました。そのうちに火がタヌキの背中の芝に移って、ぼうぼう燃え出しました。ウサギさん、ウサギさん、ぼうぼう言うのは何だろう。この山はぼうぼう山だからさ。ああ、そうか、とタヌキが言ううちに、火は背中にずんずん燃え広がってしまいました。ひゃあ、暑い、と叫びながら夢中で駆け出しましたから、山風が引きつけて、余計に火が大きくなりました。タヌキはひいひい鳴き声を上げて、苦しがって、転げ回って、やっとのことで、燃える芝を振り落として穴の中に駆け込みました。ウサギはわざと大きな声で、大変だ、火事だ、火事だ、と言いながら帰っていきました。そのあくる日、ウサギは唐辛子味噌をこしらえ、それを持ってタヌキのところにお見舞いに行きました。タヌキさん、タヌキさん、昨日は本当にひどい目にあったね。ああ、本当にひどい目にあったよ。この大やけどはどうしたら治るだろう。タヌキさんがあんまり気の毒だから、やけどに効く膏薬をこしらえて持ってきました。それはありがたい。早速塗ってもらおう。そう言って、タヌキが水ぶくれになって、ただれた背中を出すと、ウサギはその上に唐辛子味噌をコテコテ塗りつけました。すると、背中はまた火がついたように熱くなって、タヌキは、痛い、痛い、痛い、と言いながら、穴の中を転げ回っていました。ウサギは、それを見て、ニコニコしながら、タヌキさん、ヒリヒリするのは初めのうちだけです。じきに収まるから、少しの間、我慢してください、と言って、帰っていきました。しばらくたったある日、ウサギは今度はタヌキを海に連れ出して、ひどい目に遭わせてやろうと考えていたところへ、ひょっこりとタヌキが訪ねてきました。おや、タヌキさん、やけどの具合はいかがですか？おかげでずいぶん良くなったよ。では、海へ魚を取りに行きませんか？とウサギはタヌキを誘いました。それは面白そうだ。行こう、行こう。そして、ウサギとタヌキは連れ立って海へ出かけました。ウサギが木の船をこしらえると、タヌキは真似をして、土で船をこしらえました。そして、それぞれ別々に船をこいで沖へ出ました。 いいお天気だね。いい景色だね。と、でんでんに言いながら、海を眺めていました。少ししてうさぎは、このあたりには、まだ、魚はいないから、もっと沖の方へ行こう。さあ、どっちが早いか、競争しよう、と言いました。それは面白そうだ、とタヌキが答えました。一、二、三、と掛け声を出して漕ぎ出しました。ウサギはカンカン船旗を叩いて、木の船は軽くて速い、と言いました。すると、タヌキも船旗をコンコン叩いて、土の船は重くて丈夫だ、と言いました。そのうちに、だんだん水が染みてきて、土の船は崩れ出しました。大変だ、船が壊れてきた、とタヌキは大騒ぎを始めました。沈む、沈む、助けてくれ。ウサギはタヌキの慌てる様子を面白そうに眺めながら、ざまあみろ、おばあさんを騙して、殺して、おじいさんにババア汁を食わせた報いだ、と言いますと、タヌキは、もうそんなことは決してしないから助けてくれ、とウサギを拝みました。そのうちにも、どんどん船は崩れて、アップアップ言う間もなく、タヌキは海の底へ沈んでいきました。こうして、おばあさんの仇を討ったウサギは、おじいさんと一緒におばあさんのお墓に手を合わせ、おばあさんの冥福を祈りました。
lost, she'd have left me. Then packed up and split. No way to make a comeback, and everywhere the fucking world is bare. Right bone white. Forensic. Lost, she'd left me. Backed up and split. And I with no way to make her come back, and everywhere the world is bare. Bright bone white, crystal sand glistens, dope death dead dying. Driving, and diving. Four, and sick. Four, and sick. Report, dope death dying. Laughter and her smiles. Sick of laughter and smiles. And her softness, and her smiles, her midnight sighs. Her jiving drove away, her made her laughter, and her smiles, and her smiles, and her smiles. Her softness and her midnight sighs. Fuck Anzac. fuck Coltrane, fuck Coltrane, fuck Coltrane, and music clouds drifting in the sky. Fuck Red Sea, fuck the sea, fuck the trees in the sky that binds, and alligators and all the animals that roam, all the animals that fucking roam. Fuck Marx, fuck Fidel, fucking Nkrumah, and democracy and communism. Fuck, fuck, fuck smack. Revolution. Fuck the freedom. Fuck revolution. Fuck freedom. Fuck. 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 Freedom. The whole motherfucking thing. All I want now is my woman back. So my soul, I just want my woman. And give me my, I just want my woman. I just want my woman back. So my soul, so my soul.
Exactly. Well, for Pedro Show, that was Luke Stewart Exposure Quintet with Brown Gray. Then we had Few with Kachi Kachi Yama. And then finally, Heroes Gang Leaders Forensic Report. What do you got going right now, Luke?
Man, right now, I'm working on quite a number of releases coming out this year. Just recently, so full disclosure, I'm currently in Washington, D.C., but I also am in Brooklyn, New York, in Red Hook, and so I'm part of, you know, you could say that I'm part of two cities, communities, but I like to think of the entire East Coast as one big city between Washington, D.C. and New York City. I kind of see it now as one big city. Like, I'm in the southern district of the East Coast megalopolis.
Can I ask you about Brooklyn, something with Caesar's Palace?
Yeah, yeah.
Right,
that,
Jason?
That's where. Yeah, yeah. We recorded with Jason Lafarge and at Caesar's Palace for the first Irreversible Entanglements record. I also recorded the record Trio... from the band Trio that also features a very, very dear friend and elder who also recently passed away, Aaron Martin Jr. He was a very, very influential person, not just to me, but to the entire Washington DC jazz and experimental communities and otherwise. Very, very much a powerful, powerful presence.
Yeah, I'm so sorry.
But we recorded our band Trio at Caesar's Palace. The name of that record is called Days to Be Told, and it's a fantastic document of his playing.
You think
for sure.
You think the internet helped make it like a big East Coast? Brings towns together in some way.
I think so. But also, I think there's always been, from what I've heard from elders and from otherwise, there's always been a steady flux between D.C., Philly, Baltimore, and New York.
I-95
all day live, you know, all the way live. So, you know, it's a... And even contemporary times, you know, when I'm in D.C., I see so many fucking people. I see so many people from New York that are like, yeah, I'm down here for work, you know. And then I go to New York and same thing. It's like, yeah, I'm from D.C. I'm here for work or whatever. You know, so I don't see it as that big of a deal.
No, dynamic. You know, Where can people find you on the internet?
In a few places. My Bandcamp, bandcamp.com. I mean, bandcamp.lukestewart.com. My website, blukestewart.com. Instagram, @takealookaround. And then I have a lot of other music scattered throughout Bandcamp on several projects. I have to work on consolidating all of that. But,
right.
You
got more releases coming out, right? So
yeah.
When these come out, will you come back on the show and we can talk about them now that we cleared up all your past and your background? I would like to really, because you do a lot of different projects. I dig it.
Yeah, man. It's a whole lot, man. And, you know, always down to chat more. And, you know, would love to hear your thoughts as well, you know.
Absolutely.
Get into it.
Yeah. Thanks so much for being aboard, though, for this introductory spiel.
Yeah, man.
Brother Luke. People, it's been the April 26, 2021 edition of Pedro Show. Keep your powder dry.